This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Shredding the child labor safety net.
Republicans in Utah and Ohio, Minnesota, Maine, and Missouri are proposing sweeping changes to child labor legislation, including expanding the use of sub-minimum wages for workers up to the age of 20 and permitting teens to work till 11 p.m. on school nights. Missouri is taking the lead in the race back to the 19th century.
Missouri is drastically cutting back on enforcement and inspection of child labor protections, including those protecting child workers' health and safety on the job. With us is Susan F. Feiner, professor of economics and of women's and gender studies at the University of Southern Maine in Portland.
Susan, I can't help it, but a picture comes vividly to mind for me, and that is of some young girl in an apron, maybe 8, 9, 10, 11, I don't know, in New England, those old black and white photos which now have kind of become sepia, and there's a big mill in the background, or there's a loom in the background. My God, what is going on? Is this what it's about, churning back? And we just celebrated the 100th anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. Teenagers essentially working in sweatshops. Is this what it's about?
Well, I think what this is about is class warfare. I can't think of any other way to put it.
You got it on that.
Many children, many teens work because they want the work experience, but also they're trying to help their families. Family income has really stagnated in this country, and in the states where you've listed, there's actually been declines in family income. And so the younger people are going into the workplace to try and get money to help with their families. And businesses, I think, see a vulnerable population, and they're trying to take advantage of it. And the training, the sub-minimum wage period, that's for 180 days. So I can just imagine that the employers would hire someone for 179 days and then fire them so that they could hire another teen to work for $5.25 an hour. $5.25 an hour is the equivalent of 95 cents back in 1970. It's really, as you say, it's mind-blowing to see this kind of very, very regressive, backward-looking policies.
Now, that's one of the proposals in Maine, so why don't we flesh it out and see what your governor is doing. That's also, is he the same governor that removed all those beautiful murals from the Labor Department?
The very same governor.
Oh, God.
He also,
I used to think Maine was civilized.
Those are WPA murals that were showing and extolling the virtue of...
They were WPA-style murals.
Uh-huh.
They had been commissioned just a few years ago, and they were painted for the site, paid for with U.S. Department of Labor funds, and they were depicting labor history in Maine. And Maine, as you said, you know, you've got this picture of these New England mills. Maine also has the timber factories. And one of the things we're proudest of is Frances Perkins, FDR's Secretary of Labor, the first woman to serve in a cabinet position. And the Frances Perkins Center is here in Maine. Ms. Perkins is a Mainer, and her legacy is very, very strong in the whole United States. The Department of Labor building in D.C. is called the Frances Perkins Building. And this governor took down the murals under the cover of the dark of night, hid them in the basement, and he wants to rename the conference rooms in the Labor Department in Maine to take away the name Frances Perkins.
Now, he's lowering the wages for more of the young women and boys to $5.25 than used to be. So it's pay cut, right?
Well, $5.25 is below the federal minimum wage.
Right.
And supporters of his have proposed that legislation. It's pending in the House, in the State House of Representatives, and in the State Senate. the state labor organizations and the education organizations are steadfastly opposed to these things. There are endless studies that show that when you let students work more than 4 hours a day on a school day, that their grades suffer, their behavior suffers, dropout rates go up. And, you know, Maine already has a pretty serious problem of young people not completing high school. So changing the laws like this would probably make the situation with regard to high school dropouts even worse.
So that's
what the proposal is.
So
yeah.
He's also increasing the number of hours, as I understand
right.
it.
Right. He would, right now, high school kids during the week are allowed to work 20 hours. He initially asked for 30 or 32, and the bill as it stands now is at 24. And that includes a provision that would allow teens to work until 11 o'clock at night on school nights, which is very, very troubling. Many of these teens work in convenience stores that are pretty rurally located. I don't know when the last time you came to Maine was, but it's not like this is a populated state. Most of it's very, very rural. And so a teenager could be responsible for closing up a convenience shop or a gas station or something at 11 o'clock at night and need to drive home. We also have a problem in this state with alcohol and driving infractions. So it really just puts teenagers at tremendous risks. It's unconscionable.
Susan, one of the other components of this, if we continue to break it down, is what happens with young girls versus young men, the additional wage disparity. If you could break that down for us.
Well, when I was doing the research for this piece, I was at the website for the U.S. Department of Labor, and they have several places where they look at the characteristics of minimum wage workers, and they list there the numbers of minimum wage of 16 to 19-year-olds who are paid less than the minimum wage. And the figures I give in that story are directly from the Department of Labor's information. So what that means is that teenage girls are probably working in environments where there's less enforcement so that they can be paid these sub-minimum wages, because we all know that the minimum wage is supposed to be exactly that, a minimum. You're not supposed to be able to be paid below it. But if roughly twice as many teenage girls than teenage boys are paid lower than the minimum wage, that's not by the statutes or proposals of these lawmakers. That's how it falls out, given where the teen boys work and where the teen girls work.
Now, one of the things that you also have noted in your article, which is in We News, which people...
Women's E-News, yes.
Women's E-News, which people should certainly look at, GOP's attack on child labor threatens our daughters. But that is, we've got the burger flipping and the hash slinging and the French frying and soda jerking. But the whole issue of those are some of the youth that are counted. You also make it a point of the incredible numbers of young people that are not counted, that are what, sub minimum wage?
Well, they're not counted, and we don't know what they're being paid. Pretty much all the states ask for teen workers to get work permits, and then the work permit, and I remember this from when I was in high school, it was a big deal. I got a work permit, Somebody at the high school had to sign it, and I guess they sent it to the State Department of Labor or something. But the point was that you'd have this permit, your parents signed it, you signed it, the school signed it, so they had some idea of how many kids were doing after-school work. What's happened is that very large numbers of teens go to work without the work permits, and nobody's enforcing that on the employer side. In other words, the inspection situation of job sites is so lax these days that the likelihood that a Department of Labor inspector will show up and say, show me the paperwork for your teen workers, that approaches zero. So we don't even know how many teens are actually out there working because we don't have the school permits, which would tell us that they're teens.
Well, speaking of inspections being lax, we sort of headed this segment up by saying that not Maine but Missouri is in the vanguard of the retrogression. And one of the things there has to do actually with enforcement of the child labor laws, which they are weakening as we speak.
Yes, that is really a very sad situation. In the state budget there, they want to lay off. They want to eliminate the funding for the State Department of Labor investigators who examine child labor complaints, even though they know they have lots and lots of violations. Last year alone, the investigators found $450,000 worth of violations of Missouri's labor laws, and they recovered over $700,000 for workers who were being paid less than the minimum. And that's in Missouri. And Missouri is one of these states where there is this very strange thing going on where there's a conservative push to get states to refuse to ratify the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Now, everybody who took civics knows that the states don't make treaties. The states can't enter treaties. That's what the federal government does. So these conservative groups, and they're very active in Missouri, want to say that it's a violation of parents' constitutional rights to have labor inspectors examining their children's condition of work. So it's this odd thing called the parents' rights movement. And they want to ban any attempt by any government to investigate or regulate the conditions of child work. Now, I know what the words mean that I just said, but as the parent of three kids, I'm just appalled. Mm. I can't even imagine it. Why would parents not want their children to work in safe environments? I'm sure you hear what I'm saying.
I hear your tone and the reality. You've also pointed out that 40% of young workers were employed in violation of regulations requiring, various permits and so on. You go further and talk about nearly 37% of surveyed youth were working in prohibited jobs or using equipment deemed too dangerous for young workers. But what do you make out of this? We've mentioned Utah and Ohio and Minnesota and Maine and Missouri. What do you make out of the GOP onslaught on children and weakening, since we mentioned Frances Perkins, some of the very things that Frances Perkins had fought for after the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, which is protections for wage protection, hour protection, protections on health and safety. What are we to understand is going on at this time?
The Republican-led movement to roll back child labor protections is an attack on the quality of life of everyone. If they are able to, at these young ages, beat down young people so that they think these are the conditions that are normal for workers, then how are people going to move forward in their lives and think about forming work conditions that are better. We, you know, the young people have very, very little power. It's a workforce where there's not a lot of tenure in jobs. You know, you work for a little while, then you go get another job. And so it's taking advantage of this kind of vulnerability. And it also, by setting up the teens as potentially working for sub-minimum wage, it's taking away jobs from people who are desperate for them. I mean, right now there are still 6 job seekers for every job opening. So, there's 20 million people roughly who want jobs and they're either actively looking for jobs or they're working part-time and they want full-time work. But if you're an employer and you can hire a kid for $5.25 an hour compared to hiring an adult who might be able to say, what about a benefits package? What about, better working conditions? What about paid vacations or paid sick days? I think that we really just need to understand this as an attack on the standard of living that we've come to expect in the United States, that we associate with a civilized nation.
And is there any particular movement that is tackling this assault on children, essentially children?
There's a national coalition to oversee child labor, and the National Consumer Federation is the group that does the most monitoring and organizing politically to try and protect children from these onerous conditions of work. We've been talking about kids in convenience stores or potentially sweatshops, in fast food, but a whole side of child labor that we haven't talked about are our children working in agriculture, where often the whole family can work under one person's Social Security number. And so in those conditions, the children are sometimes being paid $2 an hour, $3 an hour for 8, 9, 10-hour days. And there's really been no public discussion about this in the U.S. at all. There are hundreds of thousands of kids working in agriculture under these really horrible conditions, and we don't see a political movement to challenge the right of employers to exploit children this way. So is there a movement afoot to protect children from predatory employers? Not as such, but in all the states that you mentioned, and that I mentioned in my article that first appeared in Women's E-News, the Democratic Party response to these proposals has been quite uniform and quite adamant. Democrats are saying, no, are you out of your mind? We're talking about trying to tool up a workforce for the 21st century, and you're proposing 19th century working conditions. So the Democratic Party, and to be fair, there are a lot of Republicans who also think that this kind of legislation is just way over the top, just too reminiscent of the 19th century.
Well, Susan F. Feiner, professor of economics and of women and gender studies at the University of Southern Maine, Portland, I can't thank you enough for bringing this to our attention. I cringe. I absolutely cringe at efforts throughout this country on so many fronts to take us back 60 years or more. So it's extremely important that people read this article and think hard about what is to be done. And it's in Women's News.
Women's E-News.
Women's E-News. Thank you, Susan. And it's by Susan Feiner. And it's GOP's attack on child labor, which threatens our daughters. And I thank you very much for joining us and calling this to our attention.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Open the gates and seize the day. Don't be afraid and don't delay. Nothing can break us. No one can make us give our rights away. And seize the day. Now is the time to seize the day.
Now is the time to seize the day.
Send out the call and join the fray.
Send out the call and join the fray.
Wrongs will be righted if we're united.
Let us seize the day.
Friends of the friendless, seize the day.
Friends of the friendless.
Raise up the torch and light the way.
Raise up the torch and light the way.
Proud and defiant, we'll slay the giant. Let us seize the day.
And that was a song from the Disney musical Newsies about a child labor strike by newsboys in New York City based on an actual strike in 1899. If only Disney practiced what it preaches. Now, fuming about your taxes, well, GE isn't over theirs. Now, how to avoid paying taxes by the Public Campaign Action Fund.
Why are you so sad, Sally?
Well, I just sent in my taxes. Frank, I know taxes go to support schools and things, but we are still paying more and more, and the government keeps cutting more and more. It doesn't make sense.
Maybe we should be more like General Electric. They get lots from the government and they don't pay taxes.
Say that again.
GE, the company that brings good things to life.
Not that part. What did you say about no taxes?
Actually, it's worse than that, Sally. The IRS gave them a refund last year, even though they had a profit of $14 billion or something. They even got a $3 billion refund. Sally?
I'm thinking.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that if I made $14 billion and didn't pay any taxes on it, I'd go to jail. How did they do that?
GE is a powerful company, Sally. GE's executives give lots of money to politicians and lobbyists. They attend fundraisers and shake hands and make jokes about their golf game while drinking $2,000 glasses of Pinot Noir. Then they get $3 billion back.
So if I want a refund, I should make campaign contributions.
And take up golf. It also helps if you are a corporation.
But I'm not a corporation. I'm a person.
I'm sorry to hear that, Sally.
Tell me more. Does GE have to do anything special now that they get this $3 billion refund?
No.
Do they have to reduce carbon emissions?
No.
Give money to charity?
No.
Institute Casual Friday?
Nope. In fact, they just told their employees to expect pay cuts.
After they got $3 billion?
Yes.
Do they have to create more jobs?
No.
No?
Actually, GE already creates lots of jobs. Just not here in America.
Where did they create jobs?
I have no freaking idea. But not here. In fact, they closed 29 factories. Then their CEO, Jeffrey Immelt, was appointed to lead President Obama's Council on Jobs and Competitiveness.
The president appointed a guy who laid off 29 factories worth of people to head his effort to create jobs.
Yes. Irony is a bitch.
And then gave him $3 billion.
Irony also pays well.
A guy who runs a company that closed 29 factories and got $3 billion from the government in tax refunds was appointed to lead President Obama's effort to create jobs.
Welcome to Washington, Sally.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.